Alexa, play my flash news briefing.
Here's your flash briefing from the New York Times.
In the fall of 1984, a group of economic students and economists from across China gathered for a conference in a mountain retreat called Morganshan outside of Shanghai. They met for 7 days, 7 nights, and they were there to really answer one question: how could China catch up to the West?
The overwhelming impression of China today remains that of backwardness. Horse and human power still do the chores machines would do better.
China was basically in shambles. Mao Zedong had died only a few years earlier, and he had devastated the country with his political campaigns. More than 1 million people had been killed or persecuted, and still, about three quarters of the population was living in extreme poverty. The government decided what every factory made, how much everything cost. The economy wasn't really functioning.
For the average worker, the most sought-after consumer items are a major investment. A good locally made television at $300 is nearly half a year's salary.
So as they were emerging from this isolation and this devastation, they looked out on the rest of the world and they saw that they were far, far behind.
It's morning again in America. Today, more men and women will go to work than ever before in our country's history.
The United States was the world's largest economy.
Nearly 2,000 families today will buy new homes.
Ronald Reagan was declaring morning in America again.
Under the leadership of President Reagan, our country is prouder and stronger and better.
Democracy, capitalism seemed to be working, while communism, authoritarianism had failed in China.
So what these students are up to is a major undertaking.
No, it was a huge challenge. They faced political opposition, bureaucratic opposition. What they were talking about would have gotten them thrown in jail just a few years earlier, probably. Hmm. No communist country had successfully done what they were proposing to do.
And what were they proposing to do?
So these economists, these students, they batted around a lot of ideas. There was very intense debate, often late into the night. And one of the issues they'd been debating was what to do about the factories, which were following orders from the state. Mm-hmm. Some of them said that the factories had to meet these quotas, otherwise the planned economy would fall apart. And others said the only way to get the economy to grow again was to let the factories make what they wanted. And late one night, they came up with a quietly radical idea. The factories would meet the state quotas, but they would begin producing other material and selling it at any price they wanted.
So literally the idea was factories would meet all their obligations under a very restrictive communist economy. And once they had done that, they could tiptoe into the world of capitalism kind of on the side.
That's right. They were basically sneaking in capitalism while continuing to call themselves communist without giving up any of their authoritarian control over politics.
Western observers think the dismantling of price controls after more than 30 years of communist rule could be politically explosive.
So the West thought that this would never work. The prevailing assumption was that capitalism would not function properly without political freedom. The idea was that these bureaucrats in the authoritarian system, they would defend their control of the economy, they would block change, they would crush market forces. On the other hand,
experts are urging caution about all this. The Chinese may be planning too much too soon.
As people got wealthier, as capitalism began to take hold, people were expected to demand more from their government. They would demand political rights, and the government would eventually have to open up. Basically, the West saw this as a fundamental mismatch. You can't have capitalism and authoritarianism working together. That the Chinese experiment was basically going to fail. Either the economy would fail or the authoritarian system would fail. But of course, they were dead wrong.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. From the very beginning, The West was certain that China would not pull this experiment off.
Alexa.
That's certain.
Skip headline.
From Michigan News, Ann Arbor. When your doctor asks how often you exercise, do you give her an honest answer? How about when she asks what you've been eating lately? If you've ever stretched the truth, you're not alone. Between 60 and 80% of people surveyed have not been forthcoming with their doctors about information that could be relevant to their health, according to a new study published online in JAMA Network Open. Besides fibbing about diet and exercise, more than a third of respondents didn't speak up when they disagreed with their doctor's recommendation. Another common scenario was failing to admit they didn't understand their clinician's instructions. While the idea that patients may not share everything with their clinicians is perhaps to be expected, we were surprised at how common it appears to be for patients to withhold information or beliefs, said study co-author Brian Zickman Fisher, Associate Professor of Health Behavior and Health Education and Research Associate Professor of Internal Medicine at the University of Michigan. Ann Arbor, University of Michigan students will give the first public performance of a foxtrot that was arranged and performed by prisoners in the Auschwitz Siemens Orchestra during World War II. The concert is the result of research by music theory professor Patricia Hall, who recently researched a music manuscript at the Auschwitz-Birkenau State Museum. Ironically titled The Most Beautiful Time of Life, Die Schönste Zeit des Lebens, the piece is a light foxtrot based on a song by Franz Grote, a popular German film composer. Over the last year, Hall has worked with music theory graduate student Joshua DeVries to transcribe the handwritten manuscript so that it could be performed by the UM Contemporary Directions Ensemble, led by Professor Oriol Sands. According to Hall, it is likely the first time since 1943 that audiences will be able to hear the music, as very few manuscript parts from works arranged and performed at Auschwitz have survived. The UM Contemporary Directions Ensemble, which completed a recording of the song last month at UM's Duderstadt Center, will perform the work live at a free concert at 8 p.m. Friday, November. Ann Arbor, 13 researchers at the University of Michigan have been named Fellows of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, an honor bestowed upon as members by their peers. This year, 416 members have been awarded this honor by AS because of their scientifically or socially distinguished efforts to advance science or its applications. In 2017, 7 UM faculty members were named AS Fellows. The new fellows are Roger Albin. Roger Albin, the Anby Young Collegiate Professor of Neurology, UM Medical School, and Chief of Neuroscience Research, VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System Geriatric Research Education and Clinical Center, for distinguished contributions to systems and translational neuroscience, particularly for fundamental insights into basal ganglia function and basal ganglia disorders. Ann Arbor, a new recording by UM students will bring to life, for the first time since World War II, music that was arranged and performed by Auschwitz prisoners. Last summer, University of Michigan music theory professor Patricia Hall traveled to the Auschwitz-Birkenau State Museum to conduct research on the music manuscripts in their collection. She became interested in a music manuscript arranged and performed by prisoners in the Auschwitz Siemens Orchestra. According to Hall, very few manuscript parts from works arranged and performed at Auschwitz have survived. Ironically titled The Most Beautiful Time of Life, Die Schönste Zeit des Lebens, the piece is a light foxtrot based on a song by Franz Grote, a popular German film composer. It was likely performed as dance music for the Auschwitz garrison. Upon returning to Michigan, Hall shared the work with Professor Oriol Sands, conductor of the UM Contemporary Directions Ensemble, and together they set out to make a professional recording. Ann Arbor, an extremely messy personal space seems to lead people to believe the owner of that space is more neurotic and less agreeable, say University of Michigan researchers. Psychologists from UM's Flint and Ann Arbor campuses explored the degree of messiness in one's workspace and how it affects perceptions of the owner's personality. In three experiments, about 160 participants were randomly assigned to sit in a researcher's office that was clean and uncluttered, or in another office that was either somewhat or very messy. All offices were identically decorated to suggest that it belonged to a male researcher. They included various personal items, such as a baseball cap hanging on a door hook, a cup containing candy, a baby photo, a and science books and academic journals in a bookcase. In the neat office, Office A, papers were neatly stacked on the desk, books and journals were upright on the bookshelves, file drawers had typewritten labels, and all garbage was in the wastebasket. The somewhat messy office, Office B, an experiment one, had books tilted over on the shelves, a textbook and papers lying on the floor, and a wall clock an hour off. That's all from your flash briefing.